culture to politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. What makes this nation so great? Our love of liberty. But it's true that liberty must constantly be defended against all kinds of threats. Yes, foreign threats and domestic threats, ideological threats, threats of all kind. But what about the conspiracies that threaten our liberty? Today is your day to expose the hidden hands, the dark forces that threaten the American way of life. It is Conspiracy Day on the Michael Medved Show. That means it is your day to howl. A full moon up there in the sky, and a beautiful full moon, a vivid full moon. Man, a great day for you to burn away all the clouds and the mist and the obfuscations and the secrets and the fog that obscure the realities of the dark forces that menace and control our world. 1-800-955-1776, our phone number. I was sent recently an alarming email about an attempt by the Chinese government to seize the state of Idaho. Did you know about this? It sounds pretty serious. And the governor, he's implicated in this, apparently. The email that I received says, "America, while you slept, you've been sold to China." The Chinese are being allowed to set up communist foreign trade zones in all 50 states. They're coming first to Idaho. Why Idaho? I don't know. This is not just Walmart selling Chinese junk. This is China setting up sovereign, non-taxable territory on sovereign Idaho soil, not subject to our laws and not employing Americans, not adding to the tax base at all. Is this the federal government making good on their bad debts to China and handing over state land to China as collateral on that debt? Would you think that that would satisfy the Chinese? We owe them trillions, and so we're going to give them Idaho? Don't laugh, Jeremy. Idaho's a beautiful state. How far will Americans go and allow this sellout of America? Is this one more thing we sit back and do nothing about? Perhaps our esteemed legislators can add this into the nullification bill. Nullification bill. If someone knows something about the Chinese colonies that are being established in Idaho, the sovereign Chinese territory that is not subject to American laws, sounds like an Indian reservation, actually. They have their own trade zone where they're going to sell gas and fireworks and have casinos and sell some cigarettes, too. Is that the idea? I'm making light of this. Yes, I am. Why am I making light of this? Because I don't think it's true. But if you have evidence about it, give me a call. Idaho's a big state, beautiful state. And even though I have in the past hiked in the Sawtooth Range, I've never encountered colonies of Chinese. Well, that was then. That was a long time ago, right? Maybe the Chinese communists are there now. Let's go to Duncan in New York. You're on the Michael Medved Show. Hello, Duncan.
Now, my conspiracy is I allege that a conspiracy by journalists, teachers, and historians to disguise the fact that of the American assassinations which have any sort of political connection, all of the political connections are either to the Democratic Party or to progressives of one stripe or another.
It's not true, Duncan. James Earl Ray, who shot Martin Luther King, was a racist and neo-Nazi.
Right, but he was also probably a Democrat.
Okay.
Being from the South of that era.
Okay, but he wasn't part of the modern Democratic Party that would have existed in Tennessee in 1968. Come on.
Well, I don't know.
And wait, let me give you another example. Charles Guiteau, who shot Garfield in July 3rd, 1881.
Right.
Charles Guiteau was a Republican and a conservative Republican. His words when he shot President Garfield was, "I am a stalwart." Bang, he shot him. Now Arthur is president. See,
However, he didn't like
Garfield because Garfield was a moderate Republican.
He also had hung out with and gotten kicked out of the Oneida colony, correct?
I believe that's correct. He was a nut. He was a real nut burger. Now, you're right about Joel Gosch, who shot McKinley. He was a left winger. He was an anarchist. Mm-hmm. Certainly Lee Harvey Oswald was a communist.
Right.
And Sirhan.
I'm not thinking, I'm not thinking only of presidential assassinations. Also, you know, because of recent events, we've been thinking more about congressional assassinations. And actually, in those cases, almost all of them seem to have had a political motive until perhaps the latest one was non.
When George Wallace was shot by Arthur Bremer in 1972.
Yeah.
Bremer was not political. That was not political.
No.
He
was running. I'm talking about congressional.
Okay, but Hinckley, who shot Reagan, the two women who shot at President Ford, that was non-political.
What you were saying is that
right wingers are much less likely to do violence against elected officials in the United States. I think history shows that you're correct.
Right.
But it doesn't mean it never happens. It means it's much less likely. But the idea that no one makes that observation until you just did on the show, Duncan, fair enough. Appreciate it. Let's go to Brian in San Diego. Brian, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Well, good afternoon. And Reagan revering and Gaga defending dittos from your one-time hometown.
Thank you, Brian.
Still been waiting for my pet favorite call on Conspiracy Day, and that is somebody is going to implicate you in the RFK assassination. And I do have videotape that I can provide anybody that wants to table that theory. But this is my theory, and it's dead serious. I don't think Obama's Muslim. I think he's an atheist. I think a lot of people around him, like his wife and his principal aides, know this, and they can't say it for all of the reasons that you can enumerate if you like, because as you know, you're well informed. You know what Seneca famously said about religion accurately. The masses consider it true, the wise false, and the politicians useful.
I think you're probably right. Okay, if I had to guess, my guess would be that Barack Obama does not spend much time really thinking about God or practicing any given religion. But you see, that's almost a relief because he was a member of that very, very weird America-hating church for so many years with Reverend Jeremiah Wright. And what you're saying is he never believed any of that. He was just doing that for political reasons. Look, we will never know because, of course, he will never admit it. And what is interesting about this, and it's fascinating, he goes further and further and further trying to proclaim his loyalty to Christianity and talking about his personal relationship with Jesus Christ. I don't think that when he speaks about religion, he is at all convincing.
You're listening to a special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, a Conspiracy Day from the Vault, as your cultural crusader is out observing the holiday of Sukkot. If you want to revisit more Conspiracy Days from the past, or really any show that we've done over the past 5-10 years even, become a Medhead at michaelmedved.com. It's about $6 a month when you sign up for a full year, and it's a great way to support the show and also listen to current programs commercial-free, as well as access to all of Michael's commentaries, 2 separate podcasts, and the program's history. Sign up at michaelmedved.com, become a Medhead today. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of this Conspiracy Day with a full moon up there in the sky.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
The great Michael Caine plays a has-been author who's reclusive and perpetually angry and who refuses to cooperate with his struggling young publisher, Aubrey Plaza, by participating in a book promotional tour in Bestsellers, now playing in theaters.
I won't do the bloody tour.
Do the tour or I edit the book.
No one's interested in the book. They're interested in this freak show.
Yeah, but most audiences won't be interested in this freak show, a clumsy effort at comedic melodrama that attempts to tug the heartstrings in a manipulative and misguided manner. As someone who's worked in the book industry for many decades, almost every note here feels false, and the script is appallingly amateurish for a project that is, after all, supposed to be about writing. Okay, performances can't rescue Bestsellers, which if it were rated would be rated R for language, and despite the big names, deserves only 1.5 stars.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, a conspiracy day from the vault, as your cultural crusader is out observing the holiday of Sukkot.
To Charles in Chicago, you're on The Medved Show, Conspiracy Day.
I have a specific question concerning a certain event that happened in 2010, on April 10th. You know the plane crash that happened in Smolensk that contained the president, his wife.
Oh, the president of Poland, right, yes.
Yes. Also, the whole general staff, the whole entire military.
Yeah, there were like 95 people. It was a huge selection of the leaders of the Polish society.
The thing is, I have a specific question. Do you think that the Russians may have had a hand in this specific event? And if so, why? I know many people who are very inconvenient to the Russian government who died on that plane. Among them, many of my father's very good friends.
I think it's a terrible thought because it's plausible. And again, this Russian government, I mean, we know that Putin is a longtime KGB man before he was trained in the KGB. We know that the KGB is specialized forever in eliminating opponents.
Absolutely.
But here's the reason I think it's problematic is the current leadership in Poland. They're also pro-Western. I mean, in other words, it's not as if killing the prior leadership turned Poland around.
Sir, the previous administration was anti-Russian and it was nationalistic. And we know from history that Poland and Russia never really had great relations. Poland was a satellite state in the Eastern Bloc.
Hold on for a moment, because you know about this. You know much more than I do, I'm sure. But isn't it true that plane flight, they were going to mark the anniversary of the genocidal killing at Katyn Forest?
Yes, my great uncle died there.
Unbelievable. For people who don't know what we're talking about, there were up to 30,000 officers in the Polish army. Again, the total cream of Polish society, the most brilliant young people, the most committed, most patriotic.
Conservatives.
Right. And pro-Western, pro-democracy, wonderful people, as the Polish people tend to be in my experience. And they were slaughtered. They were gunned down by the KGB and agents of the Stalinist regime and the Red Army. And basically shoveled into mass graves, weren't they?
Yes, absolutely. Every single one of them. And they're exhuming them, and still there are certain elements within the Russian government that criticize any and all efforts to establish any Russian responsibility for these events.
When were you most recently back in Poland?
Right before I went to college, which was 4 years ago. I'm 21.
I find it, when I visited Poland, it is such an energized place. It is such a miracle.
Not so, sir. Not in the rural countries. The only places that have received any sort of benefit from the so-called westernization shock therapies were the northern and the eastern parts of Poland. The southeastern parts of Poland, from which my family comes from, is absolutely poor. They have really low
Do you think that Russia wants to reoccupy Poland? I mean, it seems pretty clear that they want to reestablish the Soviet Empire.
Yes, sir, actually. Not militarily, but economically.
Right. And that is a huge problem for the United States and, of course, for the Polish people. Charles, I appreciate your call. Do I think it's out of the question that Russia had a hand in this horrible plane crash? I don't think it's out of the question. To Jonathan in Kenosha, Wisconsin. You're on the Michael Medved Show. It's Conspiracy Day.
I am calling because I have to disagree with you today. The reason why I'm going to disagree with you is because this theory, this conspiracy theory that this guy is talking about, I won't say everything that he say is correct, but as far as the one world government institution, it is correct. And it's been in the workings for years. A lot of your presidents have talked about the one world government, the new world order. They have spoken about it. As a matter of fact, John F. Kennedy spoke against the one world government, the new world order, the Masonic Lodge with the secrecies. And you see how long he didn't last as a president.
When did John Kennedy speak against the Masonic Lodge?
I cannot give you the actual date.
Yeah, because I don't think it happened, sir.
Okay, yeah, he did speak about
no,
that. I am
900% sure that John Kennedy did not attack the Masonic Lodge.
Yes,
I guarantee you he did not.
Michael Medved, I will put my life on the line.
Please don't risk your life.
That he did.
In what context did President Kennedy attack the Masons?
He specifically stated that we do not need the powers of the Masonic Lodge of a one-world government to rule this country or other countries.
It's very probable that President Kennedy would oppose a one-world government, as most of our presidents have. But, however, to say that he opposed a one-world government doesn't mean he blamed the Masons for imposing a one-world government.
No, I'm not saying he blamed the Masons. Well, one thing I want you to
are you aware, this is something that is really interesting, and I think, Jonathan, it might give you just a moment's pause. You know, Franklin Roosevelt was a Mason.
Yes.
And so was Andrew Jackson, so was George Washington, so were lots and lots of prominent people in American history. Okay. When Franklin Roosevelt was a Mason, he was most famously and significantly attacked for his membership as a Mason by whom? Do you know?
By fellow brothers.
No. He was attacked by someone who never, ever was involved with the Masons, but who attacked Roosevelt for being an old Freemason. It was Adolf Hitler. When Hitler declared war on the United States on December 11th, 1941, he specifically referenced Roosevelt as a Freemason. And that was because Hitler believed, as you believed, he believed that the Freemasons were some kind of evil conspiracy that was going to dominate the whole world. And
well, I'm not going to say the Freemasons are the ones who are going to dominate the whole world. I'm not even insinuating that. But there are powers to be. And I'm going to say something. You can look it up. You can do your research. But if you ever notice in any of Hitler's cabinet meetings, there was also always a cardinal inside of his meeting. So this thing is a little more bigger than what people knows about and think they know about.
Okay, I believe.
Do some research on it.
I believe you're completely wrong about a cardinal of the church being part of Hitler's cabinet. But is it? Certainly there were corrupt members of the church in Germany who worked with Hitler. That is true, but not the church itself. We will be right back. It's Conspiracy Day.
The truth is here. The Michael Medved Show.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. An important new study from the American Medical Association makes the point that children hurt their school performance not by the total hours they spend on screen time, but by the kind of screens they choose to watch. In the journal JAMA Pediatrics, the authors summarize 58 studies published in recent years. Their conclusions show that time spent watching TV or playing video games is just as destructive as experts have long maintained, particularly damaging children's achievement during their teenage years. But other sorts of screen time, like social media on smartphones or surfing the web, prove far less destructive because they're less passive, more communicative. In an era when parents sometimes spend thousands on tutors and test preparation courses to boost a child's academic prospects, they could produce better results by strictly, consistently limiting time gawking at the tube or lost in the fantasy world of video games. I'm Michael Medved. Let's go to John in Seattle. John, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
I'm about to finish my bachelor's degree here in the state of Washington, and I've had to deal with the aggressive brainwashing tactics of my school, which I don't want to say what it is, but it's a major university. And, you know, I've been trying to figure out, well, what the heck's going on. And I see all of these kids out in the street, they're protesting Trump, and, you know, whether they have good reason to or not.
They have no good reason to. It's ridiculous. Of course, it's absurd. But go ahead.
It is absurd. To me, it is. And it's insane what the colleges are doing in this nation. And I've tried to figure it out. And there's a couple of you could call them conspiracies. I think whatever the case is, something serious is going on in these schools. But I saw a video the other day of ex-KGB, he was a defector, And it was in the 80s or late 70s, and he was basically talking about how what he did as what the KGB's main function was to try and do something called subversion ideology, which is
disinformation. There's no question. This is real. And the Venona documents, they've had a lot of stuff that has been declassified. A lot of stuff that the previous Russian government under Boris Yeltsin, before Putin took full control, they had released a lot of these files. Putin himself, of course, is a former KGB agent. Look, this is very real. It was part of the Cold War. And was there a determined Russian effort to try to promote Marxism and try to discredit capitalism and try to discredit the United States? Sure, there was. Does that mean that Joe McCarthy was right? They had infiltrated everything? No, but they had infiltrated a lot. So stay with me, and we will get back to that, the parts that are conspiratorial and the parts that are historical.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, a conspiracy day from the vault. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the rest of this conspiracy day with a full moon up there in the sky.
John, you bring up this conspiracy. The reason I wouldn't quite classify it as a conspiracy is because one of the ideals of capitalism is that people normally pursue their self-interest, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Individualism.
Right, of course. And basically, it's quite normal. So Adam Smith talks about the invisible hand, meaning that's when a bunch of people are trying to do what's best for themselves, then it ends up moving the society forward because people tend to know best what's in their own self-interest. Here's the point. If you're a college professor at a big, state university, are you in favor of bigger government or smaller government? Are you in favor of more funding for schools, more taxpayer money being collected and being handed out to professors, or less?
Right, exactly. I know they love the government, these professors.
Of course, because they basically all work for them. I mean,
exactly.
Again, universities, by and large, are tremendously, almost all of them, except for Hillsdale College, supported by public funds in one sense or another, either by government grants or subsidies from the state or the tax deductions that people get when you contribute to a university and keep it alive. The point is that professors are not producing anything that you could sell on the marketplace. And by the way, I do think that I know this is denied frequently by academics. I think in certain arenas, it is more difficult if you're conservative to get a position. Now, it's true that every major college and university usually has one brave conservative dissenter. Sometimes two or three. But the idea that it's so overwhelmingly tilted to the left, I think, reflects the fact that these are, by and large, institutions that like the idea of taxing business that actually produces stuff, services and goods that people buy, and awarding people who hand out opinions in a really non-competitive marketplace. Because there's so much demand for universities and colleges. That's why they can keep raising the tuition more and more and more. And of course, the government makes it easier by subsidizing all the students to go to university. It's kind of a rotten deal. I appreciate your call and good luck in entering the real world after you graduate. Let's go quickly to Jim in Corona, California. Jim, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hello, Michael.
Hey.
Hey, you know, I've been listening to your conspirators and all this stuff, and I've come up with my own thought here. Now, bear with me. I'll see if I can get this straight. I've been practicing.
Good.
I think that there are a group of conspiracy theorists out there conspiring to create conspiracy theories in order so that they can help promote each other's theories to promote themselves in the conspiracy theory world so that they can, therefore, think that they are now just more than just a conspirator. How's that?
There is a conspiracy industry. There's a conspiracy industrial complex, and there are a lot of people making real money on this. And
I know they are.
And again, it's the problem is some of the stuff I know people believe is they don't believe it. They're just throwing this out there because you can raise money about it. You can get attention. You can get people alarmed. I'll give you one example. To me, the most obvious example is the millions and millions of good people who were suckered by this stupid, stupid, stupid line that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. He clearly was born in Hawaii. They have the newspaper announcements. For goodness sake, how bizarre would it be that someone would hide the fact that he was born in Kenya because they were planning from the time he was born that he would become president of the United States. The entire thing is absurd. It's beyond belief. And yet it was promoted ruthlessly by people. And people often ask me, what do you have against Donald Trump? Well, nothing now. He's going to be president of the United States. And I want him to do well and to do spectacularly well. But my problem with Trump from the very beginning was that he had run for president the first time, really, in 2011 when he was running, basing his candidacy on that phony conspiracy theory, which you're right, it is a conspiracy to advance yourself, which I don't think he even believed in. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Sean in Atlanta. Hello, Sean. You're on Conspiracy Day.
Thank you. Michael, I believe that this country is trying to put the black man down, have been putting the black man down, not only by the justice system and where Obama trying to go pardon a lot of black men out of jail, but also the companies out here. I don't understand why companies put have you ever been convicted on applications? You mean to tell me?
Wait. Are you telling me, Sean, if you were running a company, you wouldn't want to know if someone had a criminal record? Let's say you're hiring white people, okay? You have a company and you're hiring white people. You wouldn't want to know if somebody had been a child molester or if somebody had been previously a mugger or a murderer?
Michael.
Yes, sir.
If I'm checking our resume let's say you hiring somebody and they had work in a former place like 2 or 3 years ago, the only thing you could do is use the 800 number to find out anything about that person. So why is this question so necessary on an application? Some people reject that application when they see it and they ask, explain why and why not. It could be just one instant. This is not even violent. You know, and predominantly black men are the one who have been incarcerated and things like that. They want to come out and make it better for themselves. And yet, when they go and look at this application with that question, they're running away. I think the federal government should make some kind of law to abolish this on all applications.
See, I understand the argument that companies shouldn't rule people out just because they had a criminal conviction and now they've turned their life around. But to have the government restrict what an employer is going to know about someone he is going to employ working at his place of business, I think is wrong-headed and wrong. Sean, I appreciate it.
This is the Michael Medved Show.
Let's go directly to your calls to Henry, Franklinville, New Jersey. You're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hello, sir. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
Good.
Yes. Okay, well, you state about the subject of conspiracies. I wanted to enter this standpoint into the discussion, and that is about our current banking and monetary system. In the year 1913, the right to print, to coin and regulate the value of money was transferred from the United States government to private banking institutions. In the United States Constitution, it states that only Congress shall have the right to coin and regulate the value of money. In 1913, that was abolished, and our money was substituted with a currency issued by private bankers, and these bankers can loan this money to our government and charge us with the debt and the interest That, in my opinion, is a clear conspiracy, because most Americans don't realize or don't care about that particular point, which enslaves us all to a monetary system that is absurd in its foundations.
Do you think it's almost 100 years ago from the time of the beast from Jekyll Island, the Federal Reserve System began in 1913. How would you describe the changes in the United States in the last 98 years since the Federal Reserve has been there? Do you think living standards for the average American have gone up?
I do not, because it's all on debt. It's all on debt. In other words,
I wasn't asking about debt.
If someone has a value system that places a high priority on technology, then obviously,
no, yes. No, I'm not talking about I'm talking about medical care, having enough to eat, having a house to live in, owning your own home. Even with the current financial crisis and the terrible foreclosure rate, we still have 66% of Americans, according to the new census figures, still own their own homes. And it seems to me that's kind of a good thing. Certainly back in 1913, the percentage would have been, I believe it was below 20%. It was small. The point that you're making about the Federal Reserve System, the reason that most Americans have eyes that sort of glaze over when people start talking about it is because I'd challenge you, Henry. Tell me how this matters in my life or in yours.
Because a great deal of our income on a regular basis and the rest of the American population is paid to finance the debt and the interest charges to these private bankers. And it is enslaving future generations to this same colossal debt.
So what you're talking about is, but you understand, we borrowed money before the Federal Reserve. We didn't begin running a national deficit with Federal Reserve, did we?
Well, I would like you to tell me precisely, since the government was printing its own money system before 1913, I'd precisely like to know exactly who we owed it to.
We owed it to banks that loaned the money to the country. We owed it to private individuals who bought savings bonds, things of that nature. But Andrew Jackson made a very big point, and he was the last president to do it. Andrew Jackson paid off the national debt at the end of his term. And there was a big national debt, some of it left over from the War of 1812, which was a big disaster for the United States. But he paid it off, paid back the private bankers, paid it off. And the result was perhaps the worst economic collapse in all of American history, the Great Panic of 1837. The idea that somehow it is un-American to run debt, we financed the Revolutionary War, right? Our war for independence based upon borrowing. Now, you can do too much of it, and we're doing too much right now.
The truth is here. The Michael Medved Show.
Let's go to Joseph in Oceanside, California. Joseph, you're on the Michael Medved Show. It's Conspiracy Day.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I have a quote I'd like to give you from David Rockefeller, and it goes like this. We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications, whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subjected to the lights of publicity during those years. But now the world is more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government.
What's the source of the quote?
This is from David Rockefeller.
No, what's the source? Where did you find it?
CFR, June 1991.
No. Did you find it on a Council on Foreign Relations website?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. It's you understand, of course, that there's all kinds of stuff on the internet. Some of it's even true.
Uh-huh.
I would be very, very surprised if that is an authentic quote from David Rockefeller. Your point would be, here's a question for you. If it was so important to maintain secrecy, and if there was all this secrecy going on, why would he even conceivably post something like this on the Council of Foreign Relations website?
Well, it wasn't on the website. It was a CFR bankers meeting, and that was leaked out.
What do you mean it was leaked out?
Oh, they have people that are on the inside.
And who's that?
Some of the stuff gets leaked out to other people. Oh, usually a lot of times it's just busboys and waiters.
Can I make a challenge to you? Are you in, do you have a computer in front of you right now?
Yes.
Okay, go to the Council on Foreign Relations website.
Uh-huh.
And just take a look at Council on Foreign Relations. Tell me how secretive the website looks.
Well, they could take that down in one day.
No. I'm not asking about this specific quote. I'm just asking generally, wouldn't you think that if this really were a super secret organization, they wouldn't publish a very well-read monthly journal, right, called Foreign Affairs Magazine? They wouldn't list their membership very prominently. They wouldn't announce their meetings. They wouldn't have public meetings every single week.
Well, have you been to their meetings? Are they that public?
No, I don't have time for it. I think it's stuffy and musty. I've been invited. But so they're open to the public. I mean, lectures at the CFR, the Council on Foreign Relations, are open to the public. It's not a super secret society. It's not like Skull and Bones Society, which is officially a secret society of 15 members at a time. But Council on Foreign Relations is not that. I know people who have interviewed for jobs there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where this is about, we've had the president of the Council on Foreign Relations on our show in the past. What do you think they are? What do you think they do? It's a kind of a stuffy, out of date, but interesting think tank. That's what it does. What do you think they do?
I think they're a lot of them are planning for controlled world governments, and they want to be in the head of it.
Well,
this has been going on a long time. Let me give you another quote from Woodrow Wilson.
I'm not sure. First of all, Woodrow Wilson's a jerk, and mm-hmm. you and I would probably agree on that.
Oh, I do.
But the idea that Woodrow Wilson and the Council on Foreign Relations, that there was some kind of secret. Woodrow Wilson could not have been more public about his support for the idea of world government. He actually fought for it and tried to get the Versailles Treaty confirmed by the U.S. Senate and was unsuccessful. There was nothing secret about Woodrow Wilson believing in world government.
Yeah, but I think when he found out the powers that be that were in charge of it, the Illuminati, that he was scared. And he backed off later.
He never backed off. He had a stroke. Woodrow Wilson never backed off.
I think he started exposing it.
What's that?
I think he started exposing it more.
How exposing it?
Exposing
what?
Let me read you this quote.
No, please don't do the quote because I'm almost sure. Do you think that the Bilderbergs are part of this?
Sure they are.
What's that? They sure they are?
Yeah.
Do you know when the Bilderbergs held their first meeting in
1954?
Right, May 31st, 1954. Good for you. Do you know why they were called together, what the announced purpose of the meeting was, and it was very public?
No, go ahead.
No, I mean it was basically organized by Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands and a Polish politico named Josef Ratinger. And their whole purpose was to combat anti-Americanism that was at the time very, very high in Western Europe. There were big communist parties in France and in Italy and elsewhere in Western Europe. And they started the Bilderberg Group with leading business people. And they had a grant from the Ford Foundation, a public grant from the Ford Foundation to help fund them. And the CIA supported them, as makes a lot of sense, because the whole purpose was to fight against anti-Americanism. Do you think that they just made that announcement because they were trying to fool people? They had another purpose in mind?
Sure. I'm sure there was probably a couple things, and then they could have grown into more covert things after they started getting a little bit of power.
Well, what do you mean it started getting a little bit of power? It started off with the most powerful people in the world. I mean, when you talk about, do you think the Rockefellers had more power 100 years ago or today?
I think they're more covert now, and I'll tell you, I have one quote from A.M. Shell Rothschild's wife, and it says, "If my sons did not want wars, there would be none."
Okay, again, if you're talking about Mayor Anshel Rothschild, you're talking about the 1800s and another phony quote. And I guarantee you that's a phony quote.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, a conspiracy day from the vault in this greatest nation on God's green earth.